And it's Intuitive Soul Radio, and I am blessed this evening with having David Watson here with me. I'm very pleased to have you here, David.
Well, thanks a lot. It's great to be here, Laurie.
Well, you know, you, in the little time that I've known you, which has been, you know, about a year and a half or so,
yeah.
You know, I've recommended you to people. I think you're, you know, I always say that you're this big, gentle teddy bear.
Okay. Better than the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Well, well, yes. I hope that wasn't to offend in any way. I think you're just great.
Thank you. Tonight
we're going to just talk about, you know, I guess a few different things of what you do in your practice, as well as we're going to have you come back in June when you're going to do a full channeling, but you might do a little bit tonight, depending
on. Go to channel one tonight.
Perfect. Sure. So. Why don't you talk a little bit about the journey that has kind of brought you into this place? Because I know that, you know, you've come a long way and you've done a lot of different stuff. And I know that when we connect, you know, we seem to resonate with the Bodhisattva, and you know, we have this deeper connection, I think, with that energy and that compassionate. But you've come a long way. So why don't you talk about your journey?
Well, that's because I'm old.
Yeah. Oh, is that it?
That's it. That's why I came such a long way. But what I do for people's insights is I'm a deep trance channeler. I've been deep trance channeling since like 1986. So it's 22 years this year, and I also have a psychotherapy practice. I call myself a stress counselor. It's almost like two different paths, but they come together quite neatly. I've always had a great interest in what we can do as human beings, what our potential is. And ever since I was very, very young, I had been interested in alternative ways of thinking, alternative philosophies, those kind of things. And I was quite drawn towards, initially, Buddhism. And it was one of the first things that I really involved myself in. I found it was a fascinating way of looking at life. And it's very interesting today because there's so much talk about a new earth with Eckhart Tolle. And very much so directed towards self understanding and connecting with the beingness of ourselves. That was very much a big part of my early life, in fact. And well, back then, back on the 18th century.
but that was another life, was it?
I think so. But back in the 70s, there was a lot of uproar about people wanting to check out Eastern religions and that sort of thing, and I was quite drawn myself towards Chan Buddhism, which is called sudden illumination. The Chan Buddhists believe that you can go through a certain state of consciousness where suddenly you just have everything drop away, and you neither desire nor not desire. You know, and then you step into this state of consciousness of being, and I actually had the opportunity to do something like that. I would call a minor satori when I was about 25, and I always laugh and say I've never come back from it since. But it was something that really drew me towards the inner journey that we are here to experience, and frankly, it's what propelled me forward into the things that I'm interested in and actually practicing and working with now. I was involved in marketing and advertising for years, promoting and promotions and sales, those kind of things, because I was there weren't too many jobs around back in those days where you could sort of do the things that I'm doing today. But I think over the years, particularly in the last 20 years, I've had a great opportunity to really focus on particularly the channeling aspect of my life. And have been able to open doors for a lot of people over the years to help them in their life process as well. The other work that I do, the psychotherapy work, I started doing in the early 90s, where I had a personal crisis in my life come upon me, and I thought that it was a good time for me to begin to discover some more viable tools for me to cope with the world that I was dealing with at that time. Of course, they're all self-created, mind you, but that's why we learn these things. So I became qualified to practice NLP and hypnosis, and from that point on, it just kind of like steamrolled a little bit, and I began having my channeling clients saying to me, you know, geez, I really like the channeling process. Is there anything else you do, you know? And it just so happened that I did. So I began practicing in those areas as well. So I kind of had a very nice amalgamation of those two aspects of myself coming together in that way. So I guess that's kind of my little story. There's a lot more to it than that, but you know, it's we all have a story, you know.
Can you tell us a little bit about your Satori experience that happened when you were 25 that sort of brought you into this? Because this is really, you know, a lot of people, they kind of want to connect with and understand their own journeys, and sometimes that helps, and I don't know if it's too personal or...
Well, no, not personal at all. I think it's something that that we all, at some point in one of our lives, are drawn towards and are focused upon. I think today more than ever, many of us are moving into a higher vibration or a higher resonance of what we're doing within our own spiritual journey, and definitely meditation is the key to taking us there. My thing was, back at that time, I had a friend of mine who's now and back in England, practicing Chan Buddhism and writing obscure bits of information and putting them out with the Buddhist Society over there, but he encouraged me to look at that part of myself, and I definitely had a need and an understanding even at that time in my life. I was just in my early 20s at that point, and I had a sense that there was far more to what it was all about. You know, I mean, everybody says that, but you know, when you begin to pursue it and you begin to see the world around you, and as it begins to at some point become almost two-dimensional, you know, it begins to pull away from you, and you begin to look at it and say, well, what's this all about? You know, like, why am I observing this way, et cetera, et cetera? And that's what really drew me into the Buddhist experience, because what they were talking about was discovering our inner calm, our inner silence. So drawn towards that as I was, I began practicing a very particular type of Buddhism. I speak of Chan. Chan is the same as a Zen type of discipline. And in today's world, you know... even back then, it's very difficult to find somebody who would be someone you can go to teach you these things, mm-hmm. you know, and it's become very much an independent journey. I used the books of a brilliant Chinese author and translator, Charles Luke, Lukan Yu, who's been gone for some time, I believe, and he never said he was, but I believe he was the last grand master of the Chan dynasty, his translations are superb, speaking flawless several different types of Chinese, of the Chinese language, including Mandarin as well. But his translations into English were flawless. He understood the psychology of both Chinese and English, and his translations are brilliant. You can still get some of them. You can go on the internet. In fact, he did a translation of Surangama Sutra that you can go on the internet, you type in Surangama Sutra, and up comes the translation that Charles Luke did, and it's just brilliant. And that particular sutra is the one that I used to have my little Satori. In one particular part of the sutra is described the way that Avalokitesvara, one of the bodhisattvas, achieved enlightenment, and it was through the ear. He posed a koan to himself that said, "Who is listening?"
Mm.
And through that, went in and discovered who was listening, because it wasn't Avalo Kitsevera, as you might be aware. So I used that same entry, because it was the one that that was described in that particular sutra as being the most expedient one for people today. And so as a result of that, I began practicing, an intense kind of meditation where I would squat. I would have a pillow behind my legs or behind my
thighs,
and I would squat down on it and put my hands in front of me with my thumbs together, just close my eyes, breathe, and just go into state with this koan in my mind. And one day, I was in the midst of doing it, and I'd been doing it on a daily basis for, half an hour, sometimes a little less, sometimes a little more. And one day I sat down there, it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday, and what seemed to pass in the blink of an eye, I opened my eyes, and it was about 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, dear.
And I just came out of it, and everything was glowing. It was just amazing. There was life in everything around me. I could see it and sense it and feel it all the way through me. And you don't ever really come back from something like that, I have to tell you. Because once you've experienced that, it's a knowingness that's within you. Within a relatively short period of time, 48 hours around that, everything sort of stopped glowing. But the sense and the understanding of the underlying aspect of it is has remained with me, and it's very difficult for me to look at things around me and just see what I'm supposed to see. I always have a sense of far more depth to it. So maybe that's something that's helped me with my channeling, because I didn't start channeling until a few years later, until I was about 33 or 34. But it was that particular experience, which I'll always remember. It was very, very powerful. And just for anybody who wants to know, you can do it. You can do this. It's not something where you have to believe that you have to be in some special place, doing some special kind of in-breathing out of one nose and out your ear on the other one. It basically what it is it's focusing on an aspect of your consciousness, the very base of consciousness. And when you step into that, and you step into what the Chan teachers talk about as the state of mind, the state of mindless mind, that's when you're there. And people often say, you're there a lot of the time, Dave, but the truth of the matter is that when I do deal with the world around me, I find I have to kind of like come back a little bit at times too. But that comes and goes in waves in life as well, doesn't it? I mean, we still have to deal with, the bank, and we have to deal with the car payments, and we have to deal with, the family and, the whole deal. So,
and kittens.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and kittens, too. Yes, yes. Yeah. But the fact is that it's just part of it. If we have a chance to step back and give ourselves that little bit of space. That's why, I must say I enjoyed Tolle's book so much, is because it's, for a lot of us who were doing that type of meditation back in the 60s and 70s, we got involved with other stuff, like they sang in that song, Season of the Witch, it's everything changes, all the hippies are out to make it rich, so to speak. Yeah. We've all become part of, the life cycle around us. And it's good to remind ourselves that we're far more than that, that the base of who we are and our perspective and our vision of life and our vision of existence is important. Each one of our visions, and that's kind of what I try to accomplish with the work that I do as well. When people come to me and they have things they need to balance in their lives, we work on those issues to help people get to their core, because what else is there, really, ultimately. And I find the more that we help people begin to balance, the more that people begin to get back into their lives and to really enjoy them again, because it's this illusion that we have to always work hard and knock ourselves out and live this incredibly complicated and difficult life. It can be as complicated and difficult as we want it to be, But at some point, I think a lot of us just step back and say, simplicity, please, and how do I get there? You know, so that's kind of where people like me come in, I guess. You know?
No, I mean, I know that you do a lot of other things other than your channeling, because I've experienced Psyche now, and I think I've experienced something else. And you did a great meditation with me one day.
Well, yeah, I recently moved up to Orangeville, and I started a small meditation class up there. Living up in the Hockley Valley is a beautiful place, just sort of in the heart of nature. You know, to wake up and hear the blue jays in the morning—they're noisy little little bees, you know. But you know, they sure know how to wake you up. You know, you wake up with the birds, but. I have started a meditation group. We want to do more out there this summer, and as time goes on, I want to start doing more classes out there, and also opening it up to people who are interested in and have their own venues who might like to use it, because we got 8 acres of lovely rolling cedar covered property with the Nottawasaga River running through the middle of it. It's just lovely.
And you have a great vegetarian restaurant, or organic restaurant.
Organic. Don't say vegetarian.
No, it's not just a vegetarian.
But he does make great vegetarian. Yeah, that's my friend Mark Mogensen, who's when we bought the land, it happened to have a restaurant on it.
how lucky for you.
Well, how lucky for the neighborhood, because Mark is probably one of the best chefs I know, and he's got quite a reputation. He's worked in spas and places like St. Anne's, and what's that place on Bay Street, 990, Bistro 990, I think he started there many years ago. But his thrust at this moment in time is Country Bistro. So, you know, if you're out in the Hockley, you know, and you're just down that little, look for the Black Birch. But yeah, it's a fabulous spot. And it's really become quite, it's only been open since November, but I'd say he's probably become a regular place for many of the locals up there.
Nice.
And now the drive-thrus, because where we are up there is the Bruce Trail is right across the road from where we are. So there's a big parking lot. It's elegantly done, mind you. You know, but so they're right across from where this the restaurant is, and I know they're starting to sort of wander over for a cup of tea and maybe a salad or whatever else they like, you know, right. Or a steak or whatever their heart desires.
And organic.
Yeah, it is organic. Yes, he's very big on that, and what he calls natural, because some of the meats out there are very difficult to have certified as organic. But when you have some of the farmers up in that area who are very very picky about how they feed their animals, the only thing they can't guarantee is was that grain we're feeding them sprayed. You know, they can't guarantee that, but they do their best to get that kind of food in. So yeah, it's just tremendous. Tremendous food up there, I must say.
And right on your property. How
that's
nice
right.
Is that?
That's right. Can't go wrong, you know.
Yes, we're going to have a workshop up there.
Yeah.
It's coming. So, okay. So you're starting meditation, your own meditation, and you're doing some workshops.
So yeah, we'll be doing some workshops up there, probably starting more in late summer or the fall. I want to bring my channeling workshop back into focus again. I've had a number of people asking me over the last several months if we were going to open it up again. So if you go onto my website, which is askthewillows.com, that's plural for willows, you'll see some of the classes and workshops that I offer there. I definitely would like to do the weekend workshop and take it. I can usually go 2.5 days just to get people into that process and get them working with their intuitive body and opening up, their greater consciousness.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a neat thing to be able to do,
And I think, you keep talking about Eckhart Tolle and, the fact that Oprah opened this up to, millions of people. And I think, the energy is changing so rapidly.
Well, we're so fortunate with some of the people we have in the media, present company included. I think that somebody like her, the Willows call her a prophet, you know, and they call her a master, you know, which is very interesting, but not a prophet as far as a, you know, but more of a master that has reached a certain level of consciousness in her life, and now she's sharing it with the world, you know. And I think that's right. You know, a lot of people will knock her. Oh, yeah. Look, Oprah's this and Oprah's that. But you know what? We're always doing the same thing, we humans. You know, like it's really hard for us to look at things and say, you know, way to go. Look what that person's doing. And the more people that are doing this, I mean, look what she's done for Eckhart Tolle. Look what she did when she brought the secret out as well. Mm-hmm. You know, she was knocking on that. Anything that has to do with the development of human consciousness, she's into it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Why? Because she's doing it herself. It's so easy to see. She shines, you know. So when we have the great good fortune of people who have that enlightened perspective in the world sharing their beliefs and have the power to do it as well, you know, wow.
Yeah, because... Wow. Yeah, literally millions of people have connected in. And so that changes the dynamic of the energy of the planet.
Well, it does. It shifts.
Yeah.
It shifts it very, 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 very nicely.
Yes.
You know.
And quickly. I mean, maybe not everybody that's reading it, you know, got to that same point. But, you know, if you watch the classes and you, mm-hmm. you know, you do participate in it, it's, you know, it's been really well done. And... You know, it ties in with what you're doing, because now what, you know, a lot of us are doing can be brought up in a much mm-hmm. larger scale.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like I was saying earlier, the things that I was doing 22 years ago when I was starting to do this channeling thing and getting involved with these areas in my life, it wasn't very popular back then. I mean, I think Jane Roberts was with the Seth material, which is just brilliant. You know, I think that was a groundbreaker for all of us. But that was about it. And people weren't interested back at that time too much. There was a couple of people around back then who I've since met, lovely people. Michael Blake Reed, channeled the Evergreens. He lives out, he's retired now. He's living out on the West Coast with his wife, Ellie Roselle, who created and developed Core Belief Engineering.
Oh, right.
Somebody who I had an opportunity, I worked with her out there and learned the processes, you know. And also Cliff Preston, who's still a good friend. He lives out now in near Crystal Beach, you know, and semi-retired, but, you know, but never, ever retired. You know, he teaches hypnosis. He still does readings as well. He channels the echoes, you know.
The echoes.
And just tremendous people. But all of us in that time, coming forth from that time to now we can do this more full time. Mm-hmm. We were all doing day jobs, so to speak, trying to do this other stuff on the side, and you know, at times seem to be quite concerned about our sanity while we're doing it.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And okay, so let's talk a little bit about Psyche, because I know that you think that's probably one of the, you know, a very kind of groundbreaking, because it's so simple and so easy to do.
Well, I had a friend of mine give me a DVD, I don't know, about 3 years ago. It was called the Psychology of Perception. The Biology of Perception. I'm sorry, the Biology of Perception. It had Bruce Lipton in it, and another fellow, Williams. What's his first name? It'll come to me in a moment. But anyway, these two folks were presenting a particular understanding of consciousness. Mm. And Bruce Lipton, you can go to his website, just type in Bruce Lipton and off you go, has done tremendous amounts of research into human cell division and what the human cells do and all of that sort of thing, and came to the conclusion, you know, several years ago that, in actual fact, to boil down his whole, you know, hour and a half presentation, what we think actually influences and changes our physical condition. In other words, the mind is, and our thoughts and our emotional body can actually focus and heal in the body. Well, Louise Hay said that many years ago with You Can Heal Your Life, but that was something she just understood intuitively. But at that point, there was no scientific, empirical knowledge that was going to support that. And Bruce Lipton has, in the interim, come up with it. And I mean, he's like a mainline, nuts and bolts, kind of like, I'm a microbiologist. And, you listen to Bruce after a while, you're sort of like, oh, sorry, Bruce. I was going out on you there, So I watched that part and I'm thinking, okay, well, this is great. If the mind is influencing ourselves, what can we do about it? Because he was talking about cancer and saying, cancer does not metastasize. And the same as Dr. Hammer in Germany says the same thing. Cancer does not metastasize. It's a result of more trauma in the body. And then Bruce gives several reasons why it appears in other parts of the body that have nothing to do with little, like, cancer guys jumping off and floating down in your, bloodstream to go and set up camp in another part of your body, He talks about an entirely different reason behind that, which I won't get into today, but it's quite fascinating. The second part of the presentation was Rob Williams, who came out and did this thing called Psych-K, and I thought, geez, what a hokey name, Psych-K, But really, it's a short form for psychology and kinesiology. Those two combined give us an understanding of the fact that kinesiology, which is a muscle testing process, which gives us direct access to the subconscious or unconscious mind through very simple statements and given in an affirmative positive sense, and get us to connect directly into the subconscious mind, passing and going around the conscious mind, which, talking earlier about Buddhism, we refer to it as the monkey mind, throw it a peanut and it'll go crazy, and anything that goes on around us, that mind's just got to engage with until it's just knock the stuffing out of it, But so what Rob did is he had an understanding where it came to him quite in a flash one day. He had his own little satori about how to put this particular process together, because it's a combination of psychology, kinesiology, NLP, left brain, right brain psychology, and of course, brain gym. So there's lots of stuff in there that, many people listening probably have read and exercised and checked out. But if you haven't checked out Psych-K, go to their website, psychk.com, and go and look at it. It's an amazing, amazing process. And quite frankly, my feeling about it is it's the key to self direction in life. It really allows us to begin to take charge of our lives and let go of these old feelings of needing to be in control all the time, And what they actually speak of with Psych-K is it enables you to balance your beliefs. And balancing your beliefs is really an important thing, because it's our beliefs that form our attitude to the world around us. We formulate a number of beliefs over a lifetime, and as we formulate those beliefs, they then become filters for information and activities that are happening around us. Right. So as a result, for example, you and I are walking down the road, and this little mouse runs in front of us. I jump up and I go, "Oh my God, what am I going to do about that?" And you reach down, pick up the middle, and say, "Hello, little guy. How are you? I got a kitty you might not like to meet," and put him somewhere safe, right? But the difference is, we both saw the mouse, right? You had a different belief system about mice than me. So as a result, I reacted in one way, and you reacted another. But you acted, and I reacted because the mouse was no threat to you. There was no fear, no negativity attached to it.
You knew I grew up in a small town and country.
And we had lots of mice when I was a kid.
We had lots of mice.
Yeah, that was right.
Give me a cockroach I'm not so happy with, but a mouse, it doesn't bother me.
The mouse is okay. You just fight them for the Quaker oats in the morning, right?
That's right.
Just put it in a a metal tin and you're okay. but the thing is that the whole idea behind the Psych-K is to understand that we want to balance our beliefs so that something can be true for us. And if something is true for us, whatever it is, it's true for us. It doesn't make any difference if it's true for anybody else. Right. When you talk to some people and you hear some of their beliefs, you sort of go, where did you learn that? You know, but they learned it through some experience they had or something somebody told them, and they just bought outright wholesale without really going to check on it, you know, and that's where that belief came from. But for a belief to be true, and that's what Psyche teaches us, we need to have two things that are congruent. First of all, we have to believe something intellectually. We have to believe it intellectually, and just as importantly, we have to believe it emotionally. So when the emotional and the intellectual aspect of it are congruent, then the belief becomes true for us. So we see the mice, you see the mouse, oh hello, oh, and up comes the mouse, right? I see the mouse and, oh my God, you know, like you got a fly swatter or a broom or something. I can nail this little guy. Of course, I don't really feel that way about myself.
No, I know.
I love them. We're just metaphorically, yes. Metaphorically speaking here. But it's that very aspect that we can then begin to understand how we can begin to change our view of life. For example, one of the first people I worked with after taking the courses was a young girl who was having problems with her sister. And her sister was an older girl, maybe only about 7 or 8 years older than her. But at some point earlier, her mother their mother had had an emotional issue in her life, and she was unable to function properly for about a year and a half. Okay, she became like emotionally crippled. And as a result, the older daughter, who was 18 at that time, had to take over for the younger daughter, who was like 12, I think, right? Mm. So the older one only knew how to control the younger one by being mean and nasty and being very forceful, because that's all she knew, right? Yeah. So that's the way their relationship in that 2 year or year and a half period of time deteriorated rapidly. Later on, the young girl comes to live with her sister. She's moved back into town, right? And she goes to live with her sister, and she has problems with her sister now, because she's got this whole issue around her sister and what a bully she was and ba-da-da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. So I sat and I talked to her one day, and I said to her, so what's the problem here? And she said, I just don't feel equal to my sister. Mm. So I said, well, what if you had a belief that said, I am equal to my sister? She said, that'd be great, but I'm not. So we did a Psyche process on the spot. And the beautiful thing about Psyche and what makes it so elegant is that once you've determined a belief that you would like to balance or bring into focus for yourself, or an emotion that you would like to, you know, would like to balance, and within five minutes, we go through the process, have the person sit down, do the process, and they come out, we finish, and it's balanced. The conscious mind doesn't know what hit it. It's like putting a brand new program into your computer, right? And it becomes part of her, or part of you. So we did this process with her and did the muscle testing and got her to repeat it and did some brain gym stuff and all of the different steps, which I can't show you on the radio.
No, it's hard.
I'm just waving my arms around here. You know? the truth is by the time we go through the whole process from start to finish, which I say takes about 5 minutes, the belief has shifted and has balanced itself. I saw her the next week, and I said to her, so how are things going with your sister? She said, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, like we did that process last week about you're equal to your sister. And she said, oh, geez, I forgot all about it. I said, so how is it with your sister? She says, I don't even think about it. She literally in that moment had that transformation happen. And, you know, when you see something that's that powerful to somebody who just didn't believe it in the first place, it's remarkable. Yeah. I had another friend of mine who I did some work with, who has a problem with walking, had a spinal problem, and walked very, very awkwardly over the years, and had to walk with a cane for almost 17 years. Well, when I went to do some work with her, I said, what do you want to do? Thinking she was going to try and do some issues with her kids or what. She says, I just want to get rid of this bleep, bleep, bleep cane. And I said, oh, really? I said, why don't you give me something hard to do, you know? And
yeah.
we sat down and we did it. And the statement we came up with is, I walk easily and effortlessly everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. And we did that, locked it in, and I heard from her 3 days later. She called me at 10 o'clock at night. She's calling from like a Vaughan Mall north of Toronto, the huge mega mall there. And there's voices. I said, what's happening? She says, I haven't used my cane in 3 days, and I'm out shopping. I just wanted to let you know. 10 o'clock at night, she was going, you know.
That's great.
But that was amazing. she still walks with a little bit of a limp, and it's easy to see. And when she gets really tired, you know, it's like everything else. But she just doesn't use a cane anymore. And I think that's remarkable. Those are the kind of stories that you sort of think to yourself, you know, is that real? Did that really happen? But for literally the hundreds of people I've worked on in the intervening time, in the year and a half since I've been practicing or made this part of my practice, I've found that the short-term therapy really works well with people. Because, you know, quite frankly, by the time people say, oh, I have this problem and I have that problem and I have the other problem, but in actual fact, they know what the problems are. They've analyzed it already. They've rationalized it. You know, they know it's wrong. Let's do something about it. And that's the problem mostly with psychology today, which is why, you know, God bless them, our psychotherapist or our psychiatrists are becoming more into trying the drugs. Like, well, it must be an imbalance with your, I don't know, with the melatonin and serotonin uptake, and here, take this, you know? And basically it makes the people feel good for a little while, but it really has nothing to do with that. It has something to do with the beliefs inside of themselves. And once we balance the beliefs, I'm a great believer in cognitive therapy, but I'm a great believer in short-term therapy as well. Because the kind of stuff that this is, 3, 4, 5 sessions, that's it. People are balanced. They can go on in their lives, and they come back. I've had, since I've been doing it, I have people come back every, sometimes, you know, several months later with an entirely different issue. I just came in for a tune-up, Dave, and bang, we go in, we work for an hour, and they're gone again. And that's amazing. And to me, that's the way it should be when you're practicing that. So I call myself a stress counselor. You know, I don't call myself a psychotherapist and a lifestyle coach, because basically that's what I'm doing. I'm helping people step back into their lives without having to re-traumatize themselves with the thing that knocked them over in the first place. Yeah. We just do transformational work. We say, you know, the first thing people will say whenever they come in, and anyone who does any kind of counseling will tell you, you know, you come and say, well, how are you doing? And boy, do you find out, you know, let me tell you, hobbida, hoobida, hum, and you hear and you listen and they go and they go and they go. And then at some point, you know, you sort of have to stop them and say, yeah, but you know, you're telling me how you don't want to feel. You're telling me how you don't want to be. How do you want to be? And that's where we go with this type of therapy, where you want to be, not where you have been. Because most of us spend our lives mired in the past. That's what, again, Tolle, getting back to that philosophy, talks about. And I've talked about for years, and so have the Willows, about like looking, dealing with life as if, you know, you're driving your car only looking in your rearview mirror.
Yeah,
because that's how many of us live, and we're so surprised when we look in front of us and see we've hit a tree or something. You know, where'd that come from? You know, because we've been looking in the mirrors. As long as we remember, the mirror is there for reference points only, and that's what memory is there for, reference points only. You know, but not to live back there.
Yeah,
and it's very difficult for us to understand that, because the subconscious mind or the unconscious mind only understands now. It's the conscious mind that looks in the past and the future and tries to get away from now. But it's the subconscious mind that's always in now. So if we're carrying an emotional problem that we have to deal with in one way or another, the subconscious mind will continually present it, which is why sometimes, you know, you're dealing with somebody, something comes up, presses hits your envelope, and you flip out. You know, or your emotions just overwhelm you, you don't know what to do. And then after the moment passes, it's gone again. And you go, what just happened there? Who was that person that stepped in, you know? Then you begin to understand the meaning of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you know? Like, who was that person that stepped in that moment? And in actual fact, that was a part of yourself that came from a very early period in life that was responding in a powerful and protective manner, however obnoxious the behavior was, to protect you from whatever it perceived as a danger around you. That's what the subconscious mind does. It steps right in. So what we want to do is become consciously aware of these kind of things, take charge of them, and balance them in our lives. And the more we begin to do those kind of things with ourselves, the easier it becomes for us to actually direct our lives in a positive and meaningful way, in my opinion, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. So,
breathe.
No. I get excited about this kind of stuff, because this is life-changing stuff.
Yeah.
You know, this is stuff that once we begin to practice it, we see changes in our lives, and very quickly. And I could spend a couple hours telling you about the ones in my life, but the truth of the matter is just the things that have happened and the way they've happened and developed. You know, luck has nothing to do with it. Hmm. What has to do with it is belief and focus. And, you know, the secret kind of says it, you know, the law of attraction, you know, you gotta, you know, like you attract whatever you believe in, right? And the old bumper sticker joke was, you know, a man's got to stand for what a man believes in. I believe I'll have another beer, you know.
Yeah.
So we kind of laugh at that sort of thing. But how do we get into that state of believing so that we attract those things?
Right. Because we often have the duality built in. Like when you think of your relationship with money, we all need it. We all want it, but we all have very conflicted thoughts about money and how to earn it. And specifically in, you know, I expect getting money in this way, in this way, in this way, and not thinking about it any other way.
Yeah. Well, of course, money is the root of all evil, isn't it?
Well. Good belief.
Well, I think the actual statement is love of money is the root of all evil, for those of us who remember. But I think that... You know, takes us back into whole other ways of looking at life, so to speak. You know, the money aspect, I think, is something that really creates a lot of difficulties for us, because a lot of us don't understand that money is just energy.
Yeah.
And you know, it's great to say it intellectually, but to understand it emotionally is another matter. You know. And the truth of the matter is that. All of the stuff we have around money is just something we made up, you know, and it's once we understand that, it begins to flow more for us. There is no have and have not, you know. There is no feeling of being needy or being wealthy, you know. And when we step into a certain way of viewing life in a balanced way, we don't think about it anymore because we don't need to, you know. And I think that's kind of where a lot of us would like to be. I mean, I'm working on that myself, you know. But the fact is that this kind of work really enables us to step into that focus, into that way of viewing life, with processes like Psyche. So I practice it. Numbers of people in Toronto practice it, and across the country now. It's starting to become an accepted therapy, and it's very powerful.
Yeah,
very powerful. But check it out. Mm-hmm. You know, check it out on their website, and see. You
know. But it is one of the ones, other than your channeling, that you probably would recommend the most.
Oh, absolutely! I do lots of other modalities when I'm working with my clients, but I like to bring the Psyche process into the picture, because it really and truly helps. People see changes quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You see, we all want results, you know. Or, you know, you can talk about philosophy and, oh, I have to find myself and take my ego away, but we still want results. We want to do it like yesterday. Mm-hmm. So Psyche is one of those short-term, fast action, bring in a process. And when the change happens, the way I describe the change to people is, it's like you take a little eyedropper with some blue ink in it, and you just take it and drop it into like a gallon of water. And you just watch it like swirl into the water. And after about 20 minutes, you can't see the ink anymore till you hold it up to the light. Then the whole thing is that a very pale blue that's clear, like a clear blue. That's how we evince changes within ourselves.
Mm.
It's that subtle. These changes that we make are not earth-shattering. You know, it's not like the 4th of July or the 1st of, you know, 1st of July here in Canada.
Right.
But the fact is, it's not. It's not the big explosion. It's subtle. It's underlies who we are, and it comes up and wells up and slowly. Integrates in our lives so that the changes are permanent. Because what is a belief but something that we view the world with? You know, our beliefs about people, about life, about ourselves, about life and death, about good and bad, about all of the things in our lives, those are the things that we filter our perception of the world through. And the more that we can begin to handle looking at those beliefs and realize that we're in charge of them, And when we can change one belief, look at each belief as if it was a, I don't know, like a colored lens, you know? And so if I've always used to be looking to the world through a blue lens, when somebody puts a little bit of red in front, suddenly everything turns purple and you're going, wow, the world looks amazing now. It's purple now. because of the fact that you just changed that one lens. It's the same with our beliefs. If we can change a belief, one of the main beliefs I like to work with people when they come to see me, and it's a goodie, is the hardest thing for us, it seems, to do as human beings. And the statement is, I love and appreciate myself unconditionally. You know that one.
Yeah, I do.
And once we've balanced that belief into ourselves, and the key word is unconditionally, because a lot of us love and appreciate ourselves, but unconditionally, whoa there, Jack, that's another story, right? Unconditionally, eh? Let me think about that. Because we happen to be, most of us, very much focused on trying to be perfect. And as a result of that, unconditional means that you're going to actually forgive yourself if you did something that wasn't perfect. And you're going to stop beating yourself up. Well, yeah, okay. That's okay. You can do that. You know, and unconditionally means that it means that you're always in balance with yourself. So when we balance that into somebody, I talk to people a week, 2 weeks later, and I'll say, how are you feeling? They say, great, fantastic. And I have a few people who say, you know what, I'm having... And by the time we finish, we actually understand that they've actually had changes, but they have so many other issues. Yeah. We need to work on those. That's why we come back for another... But once they see the fact that they were having that transformational thing happening with that statement, then they begin to truly have faith in themselves again. Because that's what we really need is to have the faith and the strength in ourselves to understand our own beingness is why we're here in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, no bout to doubt it. You know?
Yeah.
And it's just that each one of us has to find our own path. You know, I've said for years, you know, there's one mountain and many paths to the top. There's no one right path.
No.
Each one of us has our own specific, unique, wonderful, beautiful a view of the universe. And as a result of that, each one of us has to find our understanding of it through that vision. So.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking, we're whipping through time here, but I was thinking about the last time you were here and a process that you went through with regards to a trigger, and that you, because we don't go into our emotions very much.
That was the reclaiming your emotion.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great one. It's a process that I adapted from a book called Busting Loose from the Money Game. Great book.
It really is.
Yeah. It's really esoteric, you know, yes. When you get into the finer points of it. But there's a beautiful process that's in there that allows us to begin to understand the nature of our own power and the nature of our own energy, and to know, you know, I mean, physics tells us that energy can neither be created or destroyed. So when we begin to look at ourselves and we're feeling really down or bad, or we're really on our case about something or ourselves, or we're crabbing at the world or blaming. It's a good one, you know. And we get into a high emotional state. What we've done is we've actually taken our power and pumped up this feeling, or this I guess gestalt of feelings that we have, and we just give it more and more life. So this process allows us, understanding the basic nature that energy can neither be created or destroyed, for those of us who believe, I've wasted my life doing this, I've wasted my time doing that, you haven't wasted anything, you've had a learning curve involved, and if you still want to put negative energy into it, and go right ahead. But if you want to stop in that moment and reclaim your energy, here's how to do it. And basically the steps are very simple. Step A is you, first of all, have to go right into the negative emotional state, which isn't fun. Mm-hmm. But, you know, most of us spend time pushing it away and hiding it and burying it in the backyard. But, you know, the cat or dog always, of our mind, always digs it up and brings it back to us, right? So there
and
it is.
And sometimes it gets worse and worse and worse.
So. We all saw Pet Cemetery, you know? So the truth of the matter is that this stuff comes back to haunt us. And what we really want to do is, instead of being haunted by it, look at it and see it as like a big ugly egg, you know, and look at it and say, you know what, I'm not going to put my energy into this anymore. Because quite frankly, this isn't something that's happening in this moment. It's something that's happened in the past that I brought forward into this moment that I'm thinking about. And if that's the case, then I'm stopping my energy now. So you stop the energy. Then you say, I'm going to reclaim my energy. Then you look at the big egg, and you see it cracking. And as it cracks, this gorgeous, beautiful golden light comes out and moves towards you. That's your power. You're reclaiming your power back at that moment. And you say, I feel it coming towards me. I feel it coming around me. And then you bring it right inside of yourself and allow it to circulate through your body. I won't do the whole process here, but the whole idea is in that moment, you're actually filling your cells up with your power. You're bringing it back into yourself. And then in that moment, you say to yourself, wow, I feel great. Turn around and look at the old issue that you were looking at and see that it's basically deflated like an old balloon, you know? And it's just there, and then you just send some power down to it, dissolve that. And as you watch it melt away, you just remind yourself that you almost believed that was real. And that's the cool part, because what you're doing is reinforcing again the fact that when you do this, and anyone can do this process by themselves, it just takes a little bit of practice. It's good, you know, like I usually do with my clients. They'll come and see me, and we'll do it there, and then they can just do it for whatever other areas of power giving awayness. That's a professional term, you know.
Yes,
that they've done in their lives, you know, and reclaiming that power is amazing. It's just a tremendous thing, and it gives you a tremendous feeling of self-worth again. It brings it back in, because so many of us give our power away to other people constantly, all the time, you know. And what's, you know, the payoff is that we can then start, as Eckhart says, feeding our pain body some more, you know. Here, have another little piece of my heart, you know. Yes. Baby.
Well, yeah, and what I think is amazing is that when I have done it, I mean, it really allows you to see the illusion that you created around this belief or this emotion that you've been afraid to go into because it's so painful. And then you discover that it was, you know, it was painful, but it was so long ago that it should really not be affecting your life anymore. And yet it does.
That's right. And when you take your power back from it, you actually have the strength to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because your power isn't over there anymore. It's like blowing a balloon up. Every time you get some, you go, gee, look at that big, ugly, scary face in that balloon. And you blow it up some more. It looks even bigger, you know. It's kind of like the Wizard of Oz after a while, you know. And in truth, you know, that whole energy you've created is just your energy. Energy is energy, you know. Mm-hmm. But you put it into this fear belief, you know. And that's... Or this anger belief, or you know, that's another biggie, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But once we reclaim it, it's ours,
yeah.
And we can use it in any way we want in any part of our lives, and that's the cool part about it. Because when we do that, we actually become stronger in ourselves, and we feel better about who we are. And I think that's why we do what we do.
That's right. Now I know also that you wrote a book, and it's called Ask the Willows, The Conscious Omniverse.
Yeah, Omniverse, yeah. Well, there's a universe in the Omniverse. The universe is supposed to be uni, and Omni is multi. But each one of us considers ourselves to be an individual. You know, just ask yourself. Yes, I am. and the fact is that, but each one of us has our own view of the universe. And again, going back into that understanding of how we see the world around us, the Omniverse is each of us as individuals, our own view of the universe. So that's why we call it the conscious Omniverse. We are conscious. The universe is conscious. The more that we begin to focus on the kind of work we were talking about earlier tonight, the more conscious we become. The more aware we become, the more, what's the term that the Buddhists like to use? Present, that's it. The more present we become in the moment. Now, the book here has got three or four interesting chapters, so actually several chapters in it, and we can just quickly thumb through it. I actually put this together with a friend of mine, Greg Smith, and Greg did the penmanship, and I did the channeling. And we cover areas from, let's see here, including, I don't know, God, a good one, death, the soul, non-physicals, extraterrestrials, and appendixes.
The appendixes sound cool. Yeah,
very interesting appendixes. But the appendixes cover other areas of beliefs, including disembodied energies and that sort of thing. And there's also information, like there's one of the questions, can you provide us with an activity that would help to open the pineal gland? So there's actually some information there. There's some practicing in the back, you know, because we figured if we were going to put a book together, we should give people some practical things to do, not just to sit and pontificate throughout a book about, you know, what's God like and, you know, what's this like and what's that like. and we try to bring that into effect. The reason that we cover these particular areas is because there are so many differing views on what death is and what it isn't, etc. So we kind of got away from the old Sylvia Brown way of looking at heaven as this place of crystal spires and, you know, angels floating around, and got more into an understanding of what happens when somebody dies, what happens when they cross over, and what does the conscious mind go through, what does the soul go through, what's the process there. And all of this is covered in that particular chapter. We talk about the soul and the nature of it, how it's created, or if it ever is created, but you got to read the book to find out. And of course we talk about ETs, we talk about spirits, we talk about those kind of things that are going to really, you know, really, I think capture a lot of people's imaginations that way, and very, very, you know, straightforward questions that Greg asked, because he's the one who posed many of the questions for the book, and covering things including you know, what do you think about abductions, and are there extraterrestrials participating in society together today, things of that nature. Very interesting questions and very interesting answers as far as the results are. I kind of consider it as a primer for consciousness today, to see the world in a slightly clearer way, and in a more profound way. The book is one of several that we were looking at producing. This has just been out for a few months, so it's just starting to, you know. It's just starting to reach people's consciousness, you know. We don't have a marketer out there. We don't have somebody out there who's doing that kind of work for us. But, you know, slowly but surely, and with the help of folks like yourself,
there you go. You know, people will hear about it.
But it's true. Well, that's how people hear about it. Yeah. You know, you just don't know. And the very interesting thing is I've had three or four people call me in the last few days and say, you know, I just read your book again. People, friends of mine who'd read them, and clients. And, you know, I really enjoyed it again. And I thought, well, I guess maybe I'm supposed to talk about it a little bit again on the show. And let people know about it. But if you're interested in it, just visit the website. We're going to be putting some excerpts on the website. But right now there's a little bit of information on that as we speak. And you can email me and find out how to get a copy of it. I'll be happy to get one into your hands. Cool. $19.95 Canadian.
So. Perfect.
There we are.
Wow.
So how are we doing for time?
We're like right on schedule.
Oh, okay. Well, we didn't do any channeling today.
No, we didn't. No. But we're going to do a full hour of channeling in June. So.
Okay, I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah. You are?
Yeah, well, see, I get to sleep on the job then. Right, you know? It's the nice thing about channeling. Obviously, I get paid for talking in my sleep, you know, so it's fair.
It's kind of nice, huh?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Well, I was thinking when you were saying that you were going to start doing channeling workshops again, that, you know, I could come and we could tape some of it.
Oh, yeah, it'd be fun.
Yeah.
It'd be fun. So if any of you folks are interested in those things out there, let me know. Mm-hmm. Visit the website. We haven't planned any of the fall programs this year because of the move out to Orangeville. And we're just finding our feet out there. But they're all listed in there, the different programs we have. So let me know if any of them catch your attention. And we'll the ones that get the biggest votes, we'll put on first.
How there you go. You know? There you go.
I'll include, we do things like past life workshops as well as channeling workshops. And lots to do with self-awareness and self-actualization. So
That's cool. I was wondering if Psych K can get rid of your ego.
Well, you know, in the words of the Buddha, it's to neither desire or not desire.
Oh, right.
And it's to desire and not desire. So it's both and in between. Can it get rid of your ego? You know what? It goes a long way to helping you gain that state of awareness, mm-hmm. so you can deal with your ego and begin to understand the nature of consciousness a little more effectively.
Do you think that the ego is an integral part of this dimension of this planet? Like, can you really, like, the death of the ego? We know people have done it, but is it?
But see, the ego never dies. The ego is what we have, is, in my opinion, is what we have to encourage us to live here, to exist, to grow and develop. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an integral part of our physical conscious life. It also brings us to the point where we get to a point where we say, what is this ego? Mm-hmm. And when we begin to do that, it actually acts as a course for us to begin to balance it, because that's what it is balancing the ego, not eliminating the ego. The death of the ego is sort of like, you know, somebody pulled out a taser and took care of it, you know. The fact is that the ego is neither alive or unalive, you know. It's our perspective.
Yes.
And the Buddhists say that ego is the arising of desire, and non-ego is the setting of desire. Hmm. So and then, of course, you don't want to have desire or not desire. That's what I just said a moment ago. So it's a tricky thing, but in betwixt the two, it's a matter of just learning how to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
and you just breathe. That's all you have to do, and don't worry about, you know, ego or non-ego, because in the breath, in the moments between the breath, is when you'll discover your own truth, and you can take that to the bank, mm-hmm. you know, because that's how it works. That's what I've discovered, you know, and that's how it's worked for me in this life. And it's what's put me on the path I'm on, and it's what's given me the opportunity to do what I consider the quality of channeling that I've been blessed to be able to share with people.
Yes.
You know, so.
And I would agree with that. Yeah. So there you go. Okay, so again, let people know how they can get a hold of you.
Okay, well, you can go on my website, www, of course, askthewillows.com, and my name's David Watson. You can also call me on my line. It's 416-899-3600, and I'm open. I'm happy to talk with you, and I'll be absolutely delighted to hear from you. Mm-hmm. So,
and he will. He's a great guy. Thanks. All right. Well, David, thank you very much. And be sure to tune in next week when we have, who do we have? I think we have Nancy Arruda. So wow. That'll be great. All
Excellent.
Right. Yes. So take care. We'll see you next week.